We Drive, der Auto- und Mobilitäts-Podcast von Carney.
Hello and welcome to another episode of We Drive, the mobility podcast from Carney. My name is Thomas Luke, and I'm very much looking forward to this podcast. I'm talking with a CEO and his journey to a traditional and very iconic company, but also on his pursuit in changing and transforming this company to a new icon. On top of that, we're talking about personal leadership principles, and with that, I welcome you, Jörg Hoffmann, CEO of London Electric Vehicle Company.
Thanks, Thomas. Nice talking to you.
And I think we're talking about like a quite iconic company which has a long tradition, and maybe you can help our audience a little bit what London Electric Vehicle Company stands for and why is it actually known, because I think most of us have not really heard the name so far.
No, that's a very good point, Thomas. It was actually also what I experienced when I was approached from LEVC, London Electric Vehicle Company. My first question was as well, what is that company about? And what I normally do in order to pick everyone up and saying it's always an eye opener for everyone is I say, you know, we are the company who is manufacturing the London black caps, because I mean, everyone was in London, everyone knows the black caps. And if you refer to that one, everyone knows immediately what we are doing, what I'm doing. And that's the best thing, I think, to explain that. You said it's a really, really iconic British brand. That is why I'm really proud to have the opportunity to work as a CEO for that, as a chairman CEO for that British iconic brand. Our roots go back to 1908. A company called Mann & Overton started to build the first taxi-like cars. And then we had a journey of ups and downs. Sometimes financial difficulties. The company was mostly known as under the name London Taxi Company.
Yes.
In 2013, the financial situation got really, really difficult, and the international Chinese company Geely bought the London Taxi Company. And with that takeover, basically a new strategic direction was implemented. And a new vision was implemented, and this led to the fact that in 2017 we opened a brand new factory in the UK. Basically, by the way, the first electric vehicle factory in the United Kingdom. Yeah. And the company was totally rebranded, and the previous name London Taxi Company was replaced by LEVC. London Electric Vehicle Company, you know, which still has a reference to our heritage with the word London, but also shows what we are doing now. We are now doing electric vehicles. So this is a more than 100 years of history, a really, I think, amazing British brand. But you always have to explain what LEVC stands for at the moment. That's quite clear, Thomas.
But I think it's exactly as you mentioned, it's a very iconic and heritage brand. I think everyone who has been in London or in the UK knows about this brand and these iconic cars, and with a very distinct style, styling elements along the decades, I think clearly. And that helps a lot, of course. But I also understand, and we're going to talk a little bit about it later as well, that we are not only focusing on taxis anymore, because you're like transforming the company completely from the ground up. So that's something we're going to cover. But you're on board since February 2019. And then what were your initial thoughts when they approached you actually and talked about that leadership position? What were your initial perspectives on this one?
Yeah, this is a good question, Thomas. I mean, first of all, of course, my first question was what LEVC stands for, and what the company is about, and as everyone, I immediately found out that it's a former London taxi company. Which immediately made me excited, of course, because I mean, everyone was in London. I was in London many times. I was always using the black caps, and all of a sudden having the opportunity to be the head of this iconic brand and product made me really excited. So I think it didn't take me too long to make up my mind and start the new career step. And one thing is, you know, it's a unique British icon. It's a big honor for me to be able to lead that company. But at the same time, very important is we are reinventing the automotive industry. And you know, a lot of companies are talking about electrification, e-mobility, but we are already there. Yeah, I mean, we are really right there. We have transformed our company from a traditional automotive manufacturer to a manufacturer of electric commercial vehicles. So we are in the middle of the transformation, and we are rewriting automotive industries. It sounds quite emotional and quite strong, but believe me, Thomas, I really mean that. And because of that excitement, I was quite keen to take over the role and join LEVC.
Yeah, but we have also talked earlier a little bit more about our own biographies in that sense, and about our history in the past and so on. And I clearly see from you that the emotional and the passion for the things you're standing for, and therefore I clearly see that. But just to be a little bit more precise on, so how long did it take you to make a decision? I would assume actually that it didn't take too long, because based on your personality, if there is something you think is right and that you have like good arguments. So not only on let's say the perspective of a company, on the solid foundation, on the financials, but if you also have a good feeling, I would say that you rather are a quick decision maker and move forward. Is that something how you would characterize yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, I think you certainly got it 100%. And to be honest, I think in principle, I made up my mind within 48 hours. Of course, I mean, then it depended on you know, material things, packages and everything. But certainly my overall interest was certainly clear and confirmed within 48 hours, quite fast, actually.
Yes, I would have thought like something like that. So not surprising, but it speaks for you. And what were the main reasons? I mean, you are now transforming your company. We're talking about now new business segments, so far away from the London taxis alone. And then also we're talking about new business model as well. Was it already clear that this would be the path, or is it something which you, once you took the opportunity, you started to shape that kind of strategy and forward-looking outlook?
No, for sure, Thomas. I base myself that the strategic direction that we are taking at the moment is basically based on my input and discussion with the team. What I took over as a CEO was a company that just started producing electric taxi. So basically, our electric taxi TX5 is the first electric taxi in the world. So this is great. I found a brand new state-of-the-art manufacturing facility, quite impressive. I found a later state-of-the-art brand new head office close to Coventry in the Midlands in the UK. So I found all of that, but I also found that the company would have long-term financial difficulties because the brand was stuck in the niche. Yeah, you know, our factory in Coventry or in Anstey, close to Coventry, has a yearly capacity of 20,000 cars. Yeah, and I mean, last year, the year before when I joined, we did the best year ever for LEVC. So we managed to sell 2,500 taxis, which was a record. It was doubling from the previous year, so it was a very good flying start. But I mean, saying that 2,500 cars, it was a factory of a capacity of 20,000 cars, and a big workforce. It was immediately obvious to me that this business case can't last forever. It's not sustainable. And this was exactly the observations that our shareholders from Chile had. And this is why basically they recruited me to come up with a new strategy and a turnaround plan. And this is exactly what we do now. We implemented a growth strategy since I'm on board based on two pillars. One is new product and the other one is new markets. A new product, you mentioned it, we had the taxi, but we, when I came on board, we decided to redo an electric van project. It was a project that was thought about already before, but it was stopped and not further progressed. And I made the decision to take the project out of the drawer. Got some money approved from Chile, and then we in a record time of 18 months, we got our first electric van from basically sketches and drawings on the road. So it was quite good.
That's actually quite impressive, and it's super fast. I mean, everyone who has been in vehicle development, yes, from sketches to actually having a vehicle, 18 months. We see it also in China that these startups, electronic mobility players, when they launch a new product, it takes around like 2 years. So with 18 months, you're still almost a record holder in that sense. But and it's still like a question, I think, like for European or US players and so on, why the whole vehicle development takes so long, right? It must be a different approach. We also looked into that and we made comparisons. So there is a lot of entrepreneurial and a lot of like paralyzing, and but also to a certain degree, some risk taking in order to make it work in such a speed.
Yep. I mean, that is certainly true. I mean, in fairness, Thomas, in our case with our first electric van, which is called VN5, as I said, there were already studies done. So we basically had all the plans in the drawer, but the project had been stopped before I came. So basically, my immediate idea was we have to expand our product range, and the electric van is certainly, and I can also tell you why, is a huge growth segment in the future. So we could be benefited from existing plans, but we still had to get from project approval through all the milestones,
Absolutely.
Up to start of production, which we had finally in November. What was it? November last year, exactly November last year, and we started in May 2019. So it's basically 1.5 years time to get the car on the road. And I have to say, in all fairness, to give my team even a lot of credit. I mean, despite COVID, you know, the team, I mean, my engineers were working from home partially, but we had all data shared. They even did the physical testing in some testing centers in the UK, despite COVID, with exemption rules and whatever. So, I mean, really, the team did a big effort, and it was, and everyone was really, including myself, quite proud for that achievement.
And I mean, it must have been like a fantastic reception, not only by like the employees, but also I think by the shareholder themselves and for your leadership team, because what you're now describing is really that you're coming up from a situation where the company, the outlook is rather modest, and you turn it into a growth story, right? I mean, we all love these growth stories, like with new products, new markets. Yeah. I think that all like basically energizes the whole teams actually, and puts the whole company and the company value also as well on a whole different directory in terms of growth.
100%. I mean, I really believe the whole team is really fired and inspired by our direction and where we go. Of course, our shareholder Chile is extremely supportive. And I mean, it took me just two meetings in China in Hangzhou, until to get the approval and get the necessary funds for tooling and whatever we needed. So it was quite fast. And of course, Thomas, the whole company is going in that direction. You know, we have a taxi. This will always be electric taxi. Will always be the core of the brand. It's our heritage. It's a unique, great product. But based on the TX, we have a shuttle already, but there will be a new shuttle version as well very soon. And the other strong product pillar will be vans, electric vans, smaller vans, bigger vans, and there's more to come, which I can't talk about yet. But for sure. We put the company on a much broader basis, which was really, really necessary. I think I can even state quite firmly, without our van, if we would only have the TX now in COVID days, the company would have gone in extreme big financial difficulties, I have to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I also researched a little bit, and I also we talked about it, but that there is a clear, I mean, you had a very analytical mind in saying like in which kind of segments you will grow based on your heritage, but also on where is like basically an open opportunity in that sense, right? And that's something where you have a very focused and targeted approach. So that makes it a lot easier in that sense.
I mean, the story behind was quite obvious. And I mean, as more I thought about it, it was quite clear. And in the end, I put it in many presentations and showed it everywhere, and everyone could only agree. The point is, the situation we are in is really, we have conflicting mega trends, if you would like to call it like that. You know, on the one hand, there's a clear development towards clean air, a sort of green thinking. I mean, all major cities and governments are thinking about low emission zones, zero emission zones. London is actually leading, which is good for us because we learn a lot in London. So, you know, London has a big zero emission zone, which just got extended again I mean, other cities in Europe, Paris will follow very soon. German cities are thinking about that. I mean, on the one hand, you have the tendency towards clean air zones on the one hand. On the other hand, you have completely conflicting tendencies like urbanization. More and more people are still going into the maker centers for sure.
Absolutely.
And most importantly, is all these e-commerce trends. I mean, this is the biggest trend at all. You can't stop it anymore. COVID even accelerated it. But this is the trend. This is the trend of the world at the moment. You call it Amazonization of retail. You know, there are these daily deliveries that I get at my house in Munich as well every day. You know, my family is ordering everything online in the meantime.
Absolutely, a
few deliveries every day. And then, but if you watch it, it made me really think about it. I mean, on the one hand, you all want to be environmentally friendly. On the other hand. All of these trucks that park in front of my house, and the numbers show it anyway, are all diesel trucks. You know, so standing there with their running diesel engines, go one street further down, the same exercise. Man, this has nothing to do with green environment or green
sustainability.
Not at all. And we did some, and then of course, then we did some numbers, and the numbers were quite striking and certainly supported the decision. On the one hand, we found out, just looking at our home market, London, there are more than 60,000 diesel vans getting in and out of London every day. There are delivery vans, all diesel cars that pick up some goods outside of London, some distribution centers, get in the city, get out again. 60,000 in London just per day. And then if you look at the overall segment in Europe, and this made the decision very clear, this is what we call the one-ton mid-size van segment. And that segment in Europe at the moment consists of more than 600,000 cars across Europe. 600,000 cars, 99% are all diesel. So, I mean, I don't want to make it too easy because it's still a tough management decision. But, I mean, it's a sort of no-brainer. If we are going all towards the green direction, clean air and everything, sustainability, and at the same time, the product that has to deliver all of our goods in the future is all diesel, 600,000 across Europe. This is such a huge market. And so, therefore, I mean, my decision was, or my idea was, my vision was quite simple. We need something to solve that conflict between clean air zones and e-commerce on the other hand. And this immediately brought us to the idea to try to build an electric van and continue down that path. So this is a huge growth segment. I mean, there is nothing wrong in that area, really.
Absolutely. I think there is an untapped opportunity in that sense, particularly with the trend of which you talked about, the rising e-commerce, and in general that our consumption behavior with the online world will lead to even more increase of these kind of services. So, and I also liked a little bit like a thought on many business opportunities. It's always like difficult, at least for me, to say like, hey, to decide for an opportunity or invest in it when it becomes too complex. But if you can explain it in simple words, like in a few sentences, and which we have just now, then it is a very clear case. And that's what I like actually in all these investment decisions. It's not like a little bit fuzzy around of some constraints and some future things, but it's a very clear case. And that there is a root cause which we have to solve, where we can basically also offer value to the society in terms of sustainability. And I think then it becomes a very attractive and also, like, I think, a very communicative case to make this happen.
It seems a lot of people understand our case.
Yeah, I trust so. As I mentioned, I think it's a very clear case. The only thing, just as a side note, I would also hope that someone like figures out, like with all the carton boxes of paper which we get delivered every day, would figure out like a way how we deal with that.
don't tell me. That is what I always think every weekend when I'm at home. It's unbelievable. Exactly right. You need a solution to that one, but that's not my business. I have to think about
exactly. But listen, in our audience, sometimes there are some entrepreneurial minds, and that's why I raise it. I think you are now solving like the mobility topic. Maybe someone else would also then cater for that side of the equation. I think that would be awesome, and I'd appreciate it.
We do it anyway already in manufacturing. If I look at our factory, I mean, what we do, we use more and more reusable packages. This is a big issue, yeah. Because also in the past, you know, if you get all your components from batteries to engine parts, whatever, you know, it's all in paper wrappage and whatever. We don't use it anymore. I mean, more and more, it's some investment at the beginning, but the business case pays off if you have reusable and packages that you send back and forth between the factory and suppliers. It's
absolutely
something that happens in that area already.
Absolutely. And then there are other, I think, technologies like which are like a little bit in the future, like self-healing surfaces and so on, so that we don't need to package too much and so on. So I think there are lots of opportunities, and I hope that we take a little bit more of that kind of challenge in order to make this work.
Sorry, Thomas.
You mentioned a little bit the topic of speed, like 18 months with all the preparation, but still from sketches to actually a product, it's a different thing. And I recently talked to others, and they called it the notion like China speed, right? And being very fast at decision making and move forward. And I had also like a conversation with another Chinese leader from Volvo in the past, and he mentioned when your leader says like, hey, you go in one direction, then you basically jump into the car and drive already in that direction, and then you ask actually why I should drive in that direction. So it was a little bit funny, but it was more on the joking side. But besides China speed, what else, in your opinion, with your experience now working with Chinese shareholders and Chinese entrepreneurs, what else are like characteristics and so on we can actually learn from them?
I mean, first of all, I think in our case, in Chile's case, you know, with our chairman Li Shufu, I believe we have a very visionary leader of the company. I think you can compare Li Shufu with Elon Musk in the US, which I'm a big fan of as well. But on the Chinese side, certainly our chairman is a visionary leader in the automotive industry, who is believing in e-mobility and all these kind of things, working for international companies like LEVC or Chile, but also for international German companies. And it should be like that. You know, you have to be open-minded. And I mean, my whole automotive career, you know, I lived across the world. I was in Japan, I was in Singapore, I was in Australia, in Brazil, back to Germany, now in the UK with a Chinese shareholder. You need this open-minded global attitude in order to work in that environment. But if you like that, then it's really brilliant, you know, because you can learn everywhere. And in all all the stages in my career, I picked up something in every country, in every culture. Yeah, and now it's a very unique culture I have the honor to work in, you know, as again, being the CEO of an iconic British brand with a Chinese shareholder like Chile. I mean, this is a very interesting setup, and the overall mindset has to be takes the best out of all worlds. And that's what we are doing. That's certainly my personal attitude. And if you do that, it's quite rewarding, I have to say.
Absolutely. And it works, obviously. It works and shows like tremendous results. So very, very, very appreciated that you share these insights with us. You have also, I heard about it, and then I think we talked a little bit about that, you have also set your own company culture around certain principles, such as speed, trust, and performance. Why did you choose these, is that something related to your own experience and your own preference of work, or how do you came up with them?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, this is basically the outcome of more than 20 years of automotive management positions in the meantime. And I have to admit, these were the values that I implemented in my latest jobs at my previous employer, Audi, as well.
Okay.
So these speed, trust, performance values were really successful in my previous assignments as well. And you know, and they work everywhere because it's based, first of all, on my personality, but more important, they proved to move organizations massively forward. And this is why I implemented that in the UK as well. And as I did it before in Brazil or in Australia, it also works in the UK, I have to say. And it's quite obvious. I mean, you have to be fast. I mean, I personally would ascribe me certainly as a fast person and as a person with speed. And that's what I expect from my team. Yeah. And the beauty that we have at LEVC is, and this is what I tell my management team and also my staff all the time, we should be a speedboat. Yeah. We should never be a big, heavy tanker who takes a year to turn around. We are really fast. Yeah. And we should be faster than our competitors. And I believe it works quite well. And the people get faster all the time. We are not there 100% yet, but we certainly have improved a lot in the last 2.5 years. Trust. For me, Thomas, is actually maybe even the most important value, because I believe, yeah, this I have taken over an organization at my previous employer, which was rotten. I have to say, rotten from mistrust. Yeah, wow. And an organization where gossip is everywhere, you know, where people are politically working behind the back of colleagues or management colleagues. I mean, this is clearly doomed to fail, very clear. Yeah? So trust, and based on that experience that I did in one of my previous assignments, I learned immediately how important it is to have an organization of trust and belief. Now, this is so important. And you know, when I started LEVC, one of the first staff meetings that we do every month, I told all employees about these values and trust. I explained as a two-way thinking. On the one hand, trust means, you know, we trust you as employees. Yeah, we trust you. We said you are loyal to us. We also believe that you and your colleagues work together in a trustworthy way. But on the other hand, it also means that you can trust your employer. You can trust us, LEVC, the management team, so we look after you as much as we can. Yeah, yes. So the trust principle is for me huge. And this is even something that I still take up quite strongly in external business relationships, you know, with customers, with clients. The trust issue is the biggest asset that we have as a human being in business. That's what I firmly believe. Once you lose someone's trust, you lose everything.
It's over.
Yeah. So I always tell them, my managers, guys, this is the most important asset that you can bring to the table. Trust and trustworthy, being trustworthy to your partner. Most important thing. Once you have done something wrong, that you lost that one, it's done. It's the same with our mother company in China. You know, that's so important to build trust, to that they trust us, that we can trust them. This is a daily conversation that we have about trust, about partnership. This is so important in all areas of business. And finally, performance, of course. Performance is a key. I mean, I claim a performance-driven company. I mean, in all openness, Thomas, I have to say, after I came on board, I had to replace the whole management team with the exception of one person, yeah, because they did not meet these values. They didn't meet speed. Maybe they met the trust one, but they didn't meet speed, and they didn't certainly meet the performance one. And of course, I mean, performance is a key in business. Yeah, everyone has targets, and everyone has to achieve targets. And if you can't achieve it, you need to work on a plan or have to come up with a solution. But performance is a key. Otherwise, a business organization is not able to survive. Yeah. So this is something that we are pushing a lot and certainly have gone a long way in the meantime. So, I mean, these values are based on, in a nutshell, are based on business experience over in more than 20 years of automotive management positions. And they worked before, they are still working. And it's very important to change an organization using these principles.
No, but I think it's a great fit because, as you mentioned, it's something which you developed over time and surfaced as a proven system. And then also that now with the Chinese shareholders and with the strategy which you have now in place, it's good to see that it also requires exactly that kind of mindset, exactly, that kind of speed and so on. So I think it's a great fit in terms of like how you like to operate and what you think are your strengths. And on the other side, what this mission and this opportunity actually requires actually to be successful. right?
100%. I couldn't summarize it better. You're exactly right.
So I think that combination is nice to see, but it's a really good fit in terms of like capabilities. On the other side, what I also see with speed, trust, and performance, I think they also rely to each other, because how can you be fast if you cannot trust, right?
Yes.
If we now talk about and we change direction, then the others need to follow us immediately and trust us in the decision. And then later on, when we have time, we're going to explain and the rationale and everything.
100%.
But otherwise, 100%. If they don't trust us, then they will stop working for a second, and they will be paralyzed, and then we have to still convince them, and after convince them, we have to energize them, and then we start moving. So we cannot be fast, right? So it's really the three principles actually work hand in hand, actually, and are depending on each other.
No, 100%. This is exactly true. And you know, you have to use it in daily business. I mean, when I came on board at LEVC and we did our growth plan, and it became apparent, of course, unfortunately, it was a very difficult decision that we had too many people on board for the volumes that we are able to sell.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, this is certainly not nothing that you maybe that you don't tell you like as a executive. It's the worst thing to do. But the decision was that we had to reduce our staff by almost 25%, so which was quite a substantial number of people.
Absolutely.
But you know, based on the principle of trust, and this is the most important thing, you can deal with it in a, let's say, in the best possible way. Yeah, because what I did, and this is a clear principle of communication, openness and trust. Yeah, I mean, I had a meeting in front of all our 1,000 employees at the time. Yeah, and I clearly said, you know, guys, this is quite obvious. You know that the financial situation not the best. If you go on like that, the company will certainly have a trouble in the long term, midterm future. Therefore, we have to do some tough decision. And I explained some the situation where we are and why and whatever and what the future plan is. And I tell you, I mean, so people were not really happy and didn't scream as they do
sure.
today. You know, they
sure.
do today now, but they didn't at that time because it's oh shit, this is really bad days. However, with the explanations that everyone was following, and you know, the best one of the best examples that I had ever in my career was that one of a middle management employee from the quality department. I mean, he knocked at my office. He came in and said, yeah, can I quickly talk to you? I said, yeah, of course, come in. And then he was saying, you know what? I'm not sure whether you are aware. It's my last day today. I'm leaving. I have to leave. I was told to leave. And I said, oh, God, this is really sad, blah, blah, blah. And then, so we had a bit of a conversation. But then you know what he said? He said, you know what? We shook hands and he said, yeah, I understand exactly why you have to do that. It's sad that I have to go, but I exactly understand your plan for the company. I exactly understand that we have to cut costs now to make the whole thing survive. And therefore, really, it's tough, but I understand your decision from your perspective. I wish you and the company all the best, whatever.
Awesome.
And you know what? The best thing is he's on board now again. You know, we hired
wow.
him. We invited him 18 months later again, because what I also promised everyone said we had to dismiss at that time. I told some guys, if we have the cost structure under control, if we grow again, which we are doing now, we will certainly think first about if we expand, we think first about the people that we had to let go. And he's one of the guys who's on board again.
Awesome.
And we do the same in manufacturing. We have people on board again now, which we had to dismiss now for more than a year. So, I mean, and this is what trust is. This is what trust is about. And, you know, because of that reason, really, my staff in the UK is so loyal to me. They
Super.
Trust me. They believe me because they know what I'm saying is really what I mean. Yeah, this is the point. This is not politically. It's not a story, a nice story that people want to hear. I tell them what's going on. I tell them what needs to be done. And then we execute it openly and transparent. And you know, and they can trust that. And this works. And we do that like that. And, you know, there are beautiful examples like that. And with that attitude, if you manage in such a way, you have your staff 100% behind you, which is really great to see.
That's awesome. Thanks a lot for sharing, Jörg, and also congrats in making this happen. If I now, with the time we've spent together so far and talked, I would also characterize you that you're always speaking the brutal truth, that you're like authentic, and I think that's something where people really follow. People value that kind of openness and honesty. And the only topic which I see is where sometimes you have to create the environment, and it's great that you had the environment to create it by yourself. You could set the tone from top and saying like, this is how we're gonna work and work together as a team, and not everyone can set it in that sense. And also, like, it's not right for every company, right? We all know it. I mean, you mentioned it also in the past. Sometimes you get into situations where this brutal honesty and authenticity is not appreciated. It's clearly not welcome, right? And it's great to see that there are people like you who are creating these environments where people can actually develop and create their own career path and have these kind of opportunities and openness to be themselves and to live along these values. So
that's a good point, Thomas. And if I may add to that point, you know, thinking again about our parent company, Chile, and how to deal with them and whatever, you know, it is also respected in our parent company. And I worked in Japan before, and it was also respected there. And you made the point. You can certainly summarize it, authenticity, you know, being authentic. This is my own personal dogma, being authentic as a leader. That's the key. Yeah. And I expect my management team to be authentic to their people. And this is so good. And, you know, and even if you speak to Chinese colleagues or in the past to Japanese colleagues or wherever, or Brazilian colleagues where I was working, you know, it always works. And I always say to people, guys, don't, as a German, try to be a Chinese. You will never be Chinese. This is ridiculous. You know, you can say ni hao. Yeah, but this is great. And they say ni hao, but you will not learn Chinese properly unless you live there. I mean, don't even start that stuff, you know. And you shouldn't be a Japanese because you're not a Japanese. I mean, I spoke Japanese in the end when I lived in Japan, but still, I was never a Japanese. And the Japanese were happy and the Chinese are happy to see me not being and not trying to be a Chinese or Japanese or Brazilian, because we are not. Yeah, we are Germans, or you are British, or whatever, you're American, or whatever you are. Yeah, open-minded, cultural sensitive. That's the most important thing. Yeah, you have to have your antennas for other cultures so that you're not too brutal and not too straightforward. That's really important. But otherwise, try to be authentic and don't copy a different culture. See, you can never meet properly. This doesn't make any sense. And this is a kind of I wouldn't call it secret, but a kind of principle that I always followed and said so far was apparently pretty successful.
I think it's a good advice. It shares like my experience also, like when I had a couple of negotiations in China with Chinese counterparts and so on, and it was like a mid-sized company, and they're not prepared. They tried to be so much Chinese that the Chinese actually used it as a counter technique. Actually, they would use, oh, you read someone about not losing face, and so you cannot do that in the meeting and so on. And the German negotiation team was so hesitant, so fearful about making any mistakes, so that they at the end lost everything in negotiations. It was crazy. It was like it was really hard to see, and then I had to jump in and clarify a couple of points. And then I, even more, because I'm like, I mean, I'm a Chinese heritage, so both of my parents are from China, right? So yeah. I had to behave non-Chinese in that meeting in order to set things straight. So it was awkward situation, awkward, but it's really the case.
Good observation, exactly right. Very good. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to be yourself. But also, when you choose your team, I think that's also an interesting part. Now, coming to these principles and so on. One tip which I got from Elon Musk is that he said basically, hey, if you do recruiting and so on, you ask them about the hard problem, and then you ask them exactly how he solved it. And if they can tell you in detail how it works, then you really see that he has done it and how he has done it, right? Because otherwise people say, I have done this and I have a bad role, but it all doesn't matter because it can be all only on paper. So what is something you do basically in recruiting in order to figure out whether someone is feasible to deliver against speed, trust, and performance?
Yeah, no, I've heard about it, approach from Elon Musk, apparently asking concrete questions, ask people to solve it. You know, I'm not sure whether this is something that is really that good. I certainly don't use it, because I believe if someone is fixing one problem, doesn't show you that he is, for example, following speed trust performance just because he finds a solution to an individual problem. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's very much around personality. I have to say, in more than 20 years of automotive management experience now, I tell you, if you are in doubt, I hire in the meantime people for management positions that I believe have the right personality, even if I'm not 100% convinced about the skill level. Mm-hmm. Because skills you can learn. I mean, skills, if you are a smart boy, a smart girl, I mean, you can certainly learn things fast and catch up. This is not the issue. But if your attitude, your personality is not right, you will not be successful. So in the meantime, for me, personality is a more important recruitment criteria than skills, than real skills. And this is what I'm doing. So I really talk a lot about exactly these things, about performance, about speed, about trust, how they behave, also how do you deal with your people. I mean, and have sometimes kind of political discussion, just to see what kind of mindset someone has. Yeah, and I use rather set approach than focusing on questions about pricing structure of the commercial segment or something, you know, yeah. Because this is what you can learn, what you can find out, but your personality is a key, I believe.
You cannot change so easily. It really shows. Yeah.
And what I always do also, Thomas, I shouldn't forget that one. I always try to provoke people a bit by asking or by painting a very bad scenario. You know, I talk heavily about the pressure that's going on, about the speeds that they have to do, about the working hours, whatever, which is not as bad as
something. Yeah, you see how they react.
If someone after these interviews is still excited about the job and the challenge, they're certainly the right people, you know.
Yeah. And the other ones you have scared away, Jörg.
Exactly, but they were wrong anyway, so certainly.
Yeah.
Exactly. No.
But I share exactly the same thing, because I also like staff my teams or hire amongst a lot on attitude, because I know if a person has the wrong attitude, I can tell you, no matter how smart he is, I will have problems. I will have nightmares, like how to talk to this guy and make him do the things I would like him to work. Yep. So it's really critical. Even though he's like most competent, what on earth, it's just not working. And what also is like interesting is, figuring out someone's attitude and personality is actually, again, pretty fast, right? It doesn't take like 2 days. It takes like 30 minutes and you know it already.
100%. I sometimes believe after 10 minutes, I know whether someone is right or wrong, really, I tell you.
I think so.
This is exactly just the first few sentences, reactions, body language, looking at someone's face, looking at certain answers. I mean, you can come to a conclusion quite fast, of course. But still, I mean, in all fairness, and this is something, you still don't have a 100% success rate with recruitment, with all the experience. And I always feel well when I think about, you know, the Jack Welch, the former CEO of General Electric.
Yeah.
I mean, if you read his famous book, I'm winning. It's exactly there. He was saying, even after 30 or 40 years being top manager at General Electric, I still have an almost 50% failure rate. I tend to say my failure rate is certainly not that high, but it's still a failure rate, unfortunately.
And I think there's another principle, which I, from my experience, I can say it's true, is when you figure out it's not working, you should let go early. You should not wait.
Oh, yes. This is a very good point. I just had a discussion about that topic yesterday. So it's a very good thing. 100%. 100%. If you are in doubts, it's good for both parties not to get it dragged on and see and give another chance. Because, I mean, you will come to the same conclusion just 3 months later, which has a damage then for the company, for your reputation, for the other person as well. So 100% right. If you see if you have big doubts, just act. And execute, unfortunately. But what is also important, and I praise myself for that as well, Thomas, is really, I mean, you still have to be fair. This is, I had to do many difficult decisions in my career, but based on the principle of trust, I think this also has to cover that part as well. Yeah, if you have to do a tough decision, if you have to separate from an employee, I mean, you always have to be, and you always should be fair. They are still human beings. They still have a family at home. They still have to pay their mortgage, whatever. So, I mean, I always still see the person in the job, and whenever you have to do the tough call, you have to treat people fairly. And this is certainly something as a principle that I always follow through my whole career so far. It's quite important.
Absolutely, absolutely. You have a rather very authentic, but also like people focused leadership, so that you're also like looking out for the people. Your team is very important to you, that it works. And
100%.
I think if there's like some disturbances and so on, I think that is something which really rattles you, where you have like, hey, there's it's just not working. And but once you have found this team which really like works integrated together and delivers that performance, I think then it's exactly what you wish to see actually in that sense, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, this is a good point. I mean, it's a team around me, my direct reports. It's always, I mean, wherever I was, it's always growing like a team of friends in the end. And one of my biggest disappointments that I had one day in another assignment is really is that one of these peer group, one of my guys decided to leave us. Yeah, and this was amazing. It was for me like a personal, I felt personal offended and personal disappointed. You know,
Betrayal.
and the person who left, actually, he was quite shocked about that, and he was really feeling bad in the end because he didn't think about that. I mean, despite working for us for me for a long time and being very close, he just did a decision based on job offer and opportunities and career paths, whatever. And I think he was also quite shocked in the end about my reaction, about the whole thing, and he felt really bad. But it was amazing because I felt personally, really disappointed because,
I understand.
this was not like losing an employee. It was really like losing much more. It was quite interesting experience.
Thanks for sharing, Jörg. I think it's very personal. I understand that principle a lot because what you're talking about is loyalty. You're talking about loyalty, and that was like breached in that sense. And
100%.
it's the same with me. I always look also that I would like to get a certain loyalty. I'm loyal to my team, but I also would like that my teams are loyal to me. And but the thing is, like, loyalty is hard to hard earned. It's hard earned stuff. And even though if you do everything from your side, it doesn't mean that you will get it. So it's a
100%.
very
100%.
tricky thing.
Yeah, 100%. And what you learn from these discussions is as well, you know, that somebody's saying, you know, God, this is really terrible, and I know it's maybe wrong, whatever, but, you know, if I get 30,000 euro more, you know, I still have to pay my mortgage and whatever. So, God, I have to do the decision. That's the point. These are sometimes things that are beyond your control, unfortunately. You have to
It
accept.
is. It is. It is. We have to live with that. It's a learning experience. But yeah, great to see. Maybe last two sections in our interview, and it's been like an amazing conversation so far. You had a statement on our company creates trends rather than following them. So now we're talking about your secrets, Jörg, on your company business secrets. So what kind of strategic moves do you have in mind, which nobody will expect? Or and I think you also mentioned a little bit on software, digital businesses. I know that you have also like a couple of your teams working on these areas. So now it's your time to disclose what your secrets are.
Oh yes, this is why we should maybe do that quite fast. And you know, I mean, if I first of all to myself, I would have secrets. May I wouldn't maybe work anymore. I'm not sure. So the point is quite clear. In our business, I believe we identified a clear trend, a clear tendency with green logistics and electrification into commercial vehicle areas. This is certainly a key area that we identified as a great growth path and growth story. And I mean, I can't say too much, but of course, it's not a secret. I mean, yes, it's a secret, but this is just the products that we have in the pipeline. The new products that we develop is certainly a key for the future. Yes, this is quite clear. And there's a lot of things that you can do, maybe some unexpected things where people really say, I didn't expect a former London taxi company doing that. Yeah. So now we are in the taxi and shuttle business. We are now in the small van business. But I mean, intentionally, I defined our business model as electric commercial vehicles. And without saying too much, you know, there's much smaller stuff available. Even new segments, small segments in the commercial area, and there are much bigger things possible. So, and this is what we are investigating. We have two very concrete projects in the pipeline. I think they will be both quite unexpected. But I can't say too much. But that's quite important that you make up your mind. What is the killer product that you can still introduce? That's certainly something. What you mentioned with new business areas, I mean, yes, 1 year ago, I set up a little area in our company called New Business. And I mean, it is clear, you know, we just sold in March of this year, we sold our number 5,000 taxis, 5,000 TX. Yeah? And if you think about that, I mean, our 5,000 TX so far, we did some statistics about it. We believe drove almost 190 million miles around the world, yeah, which is about, it's a nice number, 7,500 times around the world. So, and then you think about it, if you have products that circle the world 7,500 times, there must be some usage of it. Of course, yeah. First of all, we believe our product is very reliable because it has been driven extensively and the quality should be therefore quite good. So this is clearly good. However, what I think about is there's a lot of data available, and especially now in our time of digitalization of cloud and data and everything. I mean, you really have to think, what can you do with that? I mean, with 190 million miles, there is a lot of information that you can use these days, and this is what we are doing now. We will launch with our VN5 van in Europe now in June. A telematics offer where the data that the car is delivering can be used by the owner in certain ways to give some advice about charging the battery, about trip management, you know, for delivery companies. If they put in the address of 5 customers, they have to deliver something. Say computer basically suggests them the best routes, the most efficient routes, these kind of things. And but this is just the basic stuff. There's much more, and we are investigating a lot of new business areas and new business models and profit opportunities in that area based on the extensive data that we have. So there's a lot of things that you can do in the future without saying too much.
How far are you on this journey? And are you in the exploration state, or do you have already concrete projects
The telematics thing we already launched now, as I said, with our van in Europe. We have the launch of our van in Europe now in June, next month, where we launch a marketing campaign and get the car on the road. And with the launch of our VN electric van, we will launch our first telematic offer. So this is what we have already done. So, but there's much more to come in the future because you can do much more things with the data.
Perfect. We will definitely watch out and look out for these solutions and then be surprised with that.
Exactly.
Maybe lastly, because you're so entrepreneurial and you had to have this in your DNA in order to make this work, right? And also I know that you have like a long history actually in sales and marketing. So business deals and deal making, maybe a tip for our audience. What is your secret? If there is something you really want to close, what is there what you like pay a lot of attention to?
Yeah, I mean, let's say a very rational answer would be, but this is still true. I mean, you have to identify the right customers. This is really important. This is a just rational approach that you have to do, especially when we are talking about our new electric van. We had to learn some lessons when we launched the car in the UK, and we use this now for Europe as well. You have to exactly define where your product stands. Yeah, because what we find out, you know, on the one hand, everyone talks sustainability, green, and whatever. But on the other hand, you know, nobody wants to pay the price for it. This is a very interesting thing. That's a kind of paradoxon. You know, everyone is talking, but when it comes, you have to pay 5,000 euro more for a battery-driven car. Then, you know, the argument gets a different one. So, I mean, this is what we learned and what brought us to the conclusion that we have to target the right companies and the right customers, which means in our case, customers that have to drive longer ranges, because with our range extender technology, you know, we have a range up to 500 kilometers and which no other electric car can achieve. So you have to target customers who are also prepared to pay a slightly higher price for more mileage. Yes, this is really important, and for not having range anxiety. So this was a key thing. You have to identify your customers, otherwise you're wasting your time. That's a rational one. But on a more personal one now, again, and if you talk about personally how I do approach these kind of things, I mean, I'm coming back again to my old-fashioned value of trust and loyalty and open-mindedness. It's really important you have to build partnerships in business and in everywhere. You need to have partners in your employees. You need to have partners in your labor unions. Yeah, you need partners on your customer side. And if you sell, I mean, your key customers are really, really important. I mean, I was in London last week and I met two of our biggest taxi customers there personally. I mean, and they, when I met them first 2 years ago, they were saying, hey, that's great. So the two previous CEOs never have spoken to us. Yeah. They always spoke to the sales manager or if at all to the sales director, but never spoke to the CEO. They even didn't know my predecessor. Yeah, but for me, it's really important. I mean, it's always on my list. My PA, my assistant always knows when I'm going to London, I'm certainly put one of or two of our key customers on the list. Our key dealers, they all have to be considered as partners. And really, I tell you, I can't tell you a number, but maybe one day I have to count it. With this kind of personal relationship and trust and really, it's a true partnership approach based on personal sympathy even. I really, if you ask me about selling, I sold quite a lot of cars already in my career, I have to say, yeah, because that's a personal issue. They trust me and I trust them. And it also means, you know, if they have a problem, they call me personally, even being the CEO, and I look after it and sort it out. Yeah, but this is a very a strong approach. And wherever I am, I always find also good friends in customers and yeah, in on the customer and dealer areas. It's quite important. So I think that's not a secret, but you need the right personality to do that. Many people are not able to build these kind of relationships. But if you have the strengths, this is then a strong asset that you should use.
I think that's awesome advice. It's basically don't look for a single shot deal, but look for partnerships which you can build. And then you don't have to do deals anymore because you have a trust-based partnership. Yes. And that's it. That was it. An authentic conversation with an entrepreneurial leader, Jörg Hoffmann, CEO of London Electric Vehicles. Thank you very much, Jörg. It was a pleasure, and I hope that we speak again.
Thank you so much, Thomas. It was a pleasure for me as well. We can certainly speak again. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
We Drive, der Automobilitäts-Podcast von Carney.